Welcome to the Destination Begin podcast. I'm your host, Kristen Smith. I've lost over 250 pounds. I've started my life over multiple times and managed to find humor, lessons, and joy in the process. And now I'm here, sharing those stories with you. Thanks for joining me. Welcome to the podcast today. I have a guest, which is always extra fun because you get to hear someone talk that isn't me, and you get to learn a lot of things that I would have no idea how to present to you, and a little bit of a chance for you to get some questions answered. I posted a little while ago on my Instagram stories asking for some questions for today's guest, and I'm really excited to dig in. So I have my friend Dr. Carla Couturia here with me. Hello, Carla.
Hi, how are you? I'm so excited to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so stoked you're here. I'm so glad you agreed to do this because, you know, it takes your time, it takes your energy, your expertise, and it's a real honor to have you here. You're kind of a badass.
Yeah, you as well. So that's why this is a good partnership. This is awesome.
Thank you. Super fun. So Dr. Carla is an assistant principal, a college professor, and a teen life coach. So tell us a little bit about those roles.
Yeah, so I've been in education for about 20 years, and I've been a teacher, a professor, an assistant principal, and I kept seeing a gap. Like, obviously, we have the achievement gap where, you know, we have high achievers and then those students that don't achieve as high. And I was actually seeing an emotional gap. So why were the achievers that maybe aren't as high achievers not achieving, or why were the high achievers so stressed out? And it's that emotional gap. So the confidence and self-worth and, you know, motivation. So I was like, well, wait a minute, what can I do to help students in that respect? And that's when I went into coaching teens as well as parents through, you know, transitions, through the teen years, and just to help kind of mold and support families into better relationships as well as more confident teens. So, yeah.
I love that. I wish I would have known you when I was had a teenager at home, because it's a lot.
Yeah, totally is.
It's a lot. Totally. And I feel like there's a stigma around teenagers, you know, even when I would say, like, I have a teenage son, people are like, whoa, it's so hard. Like, it's almost like it's kind of sad how, you know, teenagers are, you know, villainized. I know I find myself doing it. It's like villainized. And then also just, you know, it's this wide-eyed thing of like they're a mystery, an enigma that nobody understands and are just really hard. And so, you know, I know I felt that way because I felt very ill-equipped. So kudos to you for embracing this period of life in human development and bringing some light to it for those of us that are just wide-eyed and terrified.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you. I definitely think they do get stereotyped quite often.
That's the word.
You know, and it's unfortunate because they do have a lot to give. I mean, they can be, you know, slightly obnoxious at times or inappropriate, you know, of course, but they're just like finding their way, you know. So, you know, we have to realize that they're not fully matured and grown, and they're doing their best. And one day they could be perfect and amazing. The next day they're, you know, kind of like falling apart. But you know what? That's kind of why we love them. You know, yes. We just embrace that and, you know, just try to keep boosting them up the best we can, because they're doing the best they can. And the teen years are tough. They really are. So yeah, I do feel for them. And, I hope, you know, after we speak and people listen to this, that they realize there is more to the teen than meets the eye.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Good. Well, so just leading right into kind of one of my first questions is to tell us about the teenage brain and the unique challenges of that time of life. I know there's a lot of stuff happening chemically and physically in the brain, and some of us have heard a little bit, but give us a little overview of the teenage brain.
Yeah, I think like in a summary of it, it's teens are led with their emotions. So even though they might be smart and know how to study and, you know, get A's on tests possibly, it's really they're led by their emotions. So if their friends are doing something and they feel a certain way, they might make a poor decision. And that's all their brain development. You know, they might also react because they're just in the heat of the moment and not maybe having the skills to control or to respond in an appropriate way. So we kind of have to remember that even though they might be big and tall and have a beard and even tattoos, that doesn't mean that their, you know, brain has fully developed yet.
Yeah.
So Yeah, so that's something that, you know, as teens tend to look older, they don't necessarily have, you know, the growth within their brain or body chemistry yet. So it's those emotions, and how do we, you know, better prepare teens to handle obstacles or, you know, things that get in the way instead of just, you know, running away from them or numbing them? How do we handle things that, you know, are kind of can be an uphill battle? So really just supporting them with some tools. So until their brain does develop fully, how they can handle situations that arise. Yeah.
So true. I feel like tools, that's such a great point. My son, you know, he's 25 now, but I just felt like he would look around, like he didn't really know what to do. And me as a parent, I expected things of him he would just know, until mm-hmm. sometimes in frustration, he would say, like, I didn't know. And I'd say, Oh, I didn't even realize that there are certain things that I have to teach you or provide you a tool for that. You know, you haven't experienced these new big things. So of course you don't have all the tools in your toolbox to cope mm-hmm. with and to deal with successfully. And when he got a tool, when he got something he felt like worked, he felt a huge relief, and he was confident, like you say, confident that he could handle that. But unless he had the tool, he just threw up his hands, and it was so overwhelming for him. And he felt so mm-hmm. bad. The assumptions mm-hmm. that I made as a parent, I mean, in this mm-hmm. conversation, you're probably going to hear a lot of me saying how I did it wrong. Cause I feel like mm-hmm. parenting him was just such a lesson for me of all of the things I didn't know. And of course, hindsight is, you know, 2020. Mm-hmm. But you know, I'm happy to use my regret to teach other people what not to do too, but the tools, like, what are some of the most important tools that teens really need?
Yeah, and I think, and to your point too, I mean, I think a lot of parents feel the way you feel, and you have to remember, don't be too hard on yourself. It's not like a child or a teen comes with a manual, you know, and everything that I'm saying may or may not work for your teen specifically. So it's all individualized, and for all the parents out there and you as well, you did the best you could at that time. You made the best decisions you could. But some tools for teens, I mean, a lot of times it has to do with their mindset. So it could be something such as creating mantras based upon goals that they have. It could be just getting up and moving in that state. So I know, you know, you're a trainer, you work with weight loss and with the body and everything. That's a big thing. So a lot of teens on computers and on video games and their phone all the time doesn't help the situation. But a lot of times it's, you know, changing their state, getting up, moving. If they do get in a state that's maybe, you know, sad or depressed or, you know, just anxious or worried or something like that. And definitely getting up and moving. Routines is a good thing too, because we can kind of, you know, stay up really late, you know, be late for school, kind of get lazy with our homework and, you know, all of those kind of things. So a routine and really building like positive habits. Mm. So, you know, instead of, I don't know, doing something like playing video games for 6 hours, maybe we play for 2 hours and then we go out for a walk and we walk the dog or something like that, you know, so just kind of, as well as eating habits, you know, pass by the bag of chips and maybe have the banana instead, you know, so just it can be small incremental things or, you know, or big things. But, you know, those are some of the things that I do with my teens, even, you know, meditation. Just there's so much noise out there, noise at school, noise at home, you know, brothers and sisters and parents telling you this and that, and then teachers are telling you this, and you have to think of how much is coming at them, plus their phones going wild because everyone's messaging all day, all hours of the day. And just to like set all of that aside and just to take a deep breath, and you know, maybe they like to journal, maybe they just like to sit back and relax and zone out for a few minutes, or maybe it's just like going for a walk. That's a form of meditation. So it doesn't have to be anything super deep, but just a pause from life and just, you know, kind of grounding and resetting. Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good point. I mean, it's like, if it works for us to calm our brain, it's, you know, probably going to be helpful for them too. It's just maybe in smaller doses and not punitive. I know my friend hated the punitive. Like, he'd be like, I don't want to do what you're doing. It felt like punishment. To be like, well, I do this. And, you know, then I'd find verbiage like, hey, I tried this. I don't know if it would work for you, but do you want to try it? And it was a choice. But a lot of the same coping things worked for him that worked for me, because, you know, that was one thing I learned, is he's just a human like me too.
And you brought up a good point about choice, because a lot of teens feel a huge lack of control. So they did not purchase the house they live in. They have their room, or maybe they share their room. They, you know, eat dinner when you tell them to eat dinner. They go to school and they do what the teachers tell them. And so it feels like they don't have much of a control over their life. So what kind of choices can we give them to have some sort of control? So if you really want your teen to go to the gym, if you're forcing them to go every single day, or hey, maybe it's, you know, 3 out of the 5 days of the week and they pick the time when they go, or, you know, or the activity that they do, or maybe they choose what's for dinner and they cook it with you. You know, just there's that, having some sort of control over their life and their choices really helps out, because, you know, just being bossed around all day just doesn't feel good to any of us.
No, I don't want to be bossed around either. I mean,
right. And I mean, there is some, to an extent, there's things they have to do, just like we have to do. But, you know, we have a lot more choice, whereas a teen doesn't necessarily. So the choices we can give them make them that much more confident in themselves. Yeah, for sure.
I love that. Yeah. Such a good point. Mm-hmm. So you alluded a little bit to it. And so some of the questions that I got from my listeners, we're just going to jump kind of right into these, is, and I've gotten this before, and I've actually coached some teenagers and some families a little bit on nutrition, but, you know, I'm in the weight loss nutrition space, and I'll get messages from parents that say, what do I do? My kid is gaining weight. I don't want to say anything to him or her. Usually it's daughters. I don't want to say anything to her because I don't want to give her a complex, and I don't want to put her on a diet. But I see her weight going up. I see her not liking her body. I understand that, you know, obviously we have different standards than we used to on what we say is thin or overweight or healthy or whatever. But parents don't want to give their daughters a complex. You don't want to put them on a diet, but also you don't want to see them gaining weight. It's unhealthy. It starts to affect their body image. And, you know, there's a level of healthy weight and unhealthy weight. And how do you talk about it? How do you talk about it? How do you step in? Do you talk about it? And, you know, so I'm curious what your first step in a conversation like that would be in a household or with a parent.
Yeah. Like, you know, a couple things that you said there. My first instinct is also like, what is the parent doing too? So part of it is, if you think they're overeating, are you buying a bunch of junk food? Are you eating late at night? Are you modeling healthy behavior? So there's part of it is that as well. And I do agree, like, you don't want to hurt a teen's self-confidence or the possibility of them having some sort of eating disorder. So you don't want to just be direct and be rude about it, obviously. You know, you don't want to harm their kind of sense of self by saying, you know, asking a question that is going to really make them be defensive. So I think it's more of a, it's kind of like, a lot of times I use like a car conversation. So you're kind of sitting next to them in the car. It's not, you know, aggressive, like you're coming at them and looking at them in the eye. You know, you're side by side, and, you know, you maybe, you know, even starting off being vulnerable yourself. Cause a lot of times parents, it's about them being vulnerable. And if you're showing that vulnerability, you'll receive the same thing from your teen. So a lot of times teens will clam up because maybe you nag them every day about the food that they're eating. Well, like, that's like, if someone was nagging me every day, I'd be super frustrated. So, you know, maybe it's a, like I said, a conversation in the car, and you're being vulnerable. And as a parent, you're saying like, yeah, I don't know, lately I've been eating a lot of pizza as a parent, for example, let's just say, and I've been a little bit off my workout regimen and I'm not feeling so hot. And I wanted to kind of up my game a bit. And, you know, I noticed that, you know, possibly, you know, maybe this is something we can do together. You know, you're not even directly like saying to them, you look like you're gaining weight. But you maybe are just like alluding to it as in being vulnerable. And then they might say, yeah, honestly, I haven't felt really good myself either. And I want to try to do X, Y, and Z. So sometimes just like, you know, I don't want to say beat around the bush, because that's not what I'm saying here. But a lot of times it's like, you know, your kid, and sometimes they already know what you're going to tell them. They already know that they don't feel healthy or that they're overweight or whatever the situation might be. So do we need to point it out for them? No, maybe we just need to come up with a plan that, like, we all can eat healthier, or we all can put more activity in our day, and, you know, maybe ask some leading questions, and, you know, their responses might surprise you. I think it's just creating that comfortable space for the conversation is almost more important than what you say, as well as listening to them. So listening to them is huge. Teens just want to be heard. And, you know, whether they agree or disagree with you, and, you know, listening, creating a comfortable space, and then being vulnerable, I think, are the things that really lead to a healthy conversation.
I love that. And I love the idea of leading it by modeling. You know, that's a strategy in all relationships that I teach people is, you know, if you see something in someone else, whether it's your kid, your spouse, your coworkers, first look at yourself and say, is this present in me? If so, I got to clean that up. I have no right to point out. And obviously when you're a parent of a child, you do have, you know, the responsibility of leading and guiding them, but say I have no right to require something of someone else that I myself am not willing to do. So, you know, my advice has always been in these situations too with parents is it's not fair to have the 7-year-old eat one thing, the 10-year-old eat something, and then the 14-year-old who looks like she's gaining weight eating something else. Like if this is about healthy food and healthy quantities, it's a healthy household or it's not a healthy household because you're just pushing something down the street. If the 7-year-old who's running around playing all day and can melt down on a whole bunch of junk food and it's not showing up on them yet, that's going to come to roost at some point in their health and potentially their weight. So it is an opportunity to say, what are we doing in this household? Is this a healthy household? You never want to shine the spotlight on any one habit, because if it's not healthy for one person, it's not healthy for anyone. So I think that's very, it's very important to set the example. And then, you know, it's hard, I think, for parents to, it feels like punishment. Like, well, I don't want to say no to all the ice cream and junk food and treats because I don't have a weight issue and it's not fair. And that's where I would say, well, you know, these are things that are required of us to lead the way with a good example. It's not about not fair, but also a way to say we're in this together. We're all going to look at our sugar content. We're all going to look at our eating habits and our mindless eating or whatever it is. So yeah, leading by example is something that I teach. And I think with nutrition, it's really important. Do you find with teenagers, and I guess I'm picking on girls because I feel like it happens to girls a little bit more often, but do you find with girls nowadays with body image and, you know, there's been a big movement to more body positivity. So it feels like we're moving into a better place with that. What experience have you had? What things are girls grappling with body image?
Yeah. And I know you said you're focusing more on girls, but I see it with boys too. Like, if they're not the athlete or they don't have muscles or, you know, they're the skinny kid or they're the big kid. It honestly goes for boys too. Wow.
I didn't think about that.
Well, like a lot of times, even like you ever hear like the gentle giant. So, you have like a kid that's maybe in eighth grade, just a big kid, you know, he's maybe 6 foot already, not super overweight or anything, but just a big kid. And kids are always picking on him because they, you know, like he's big. So they figure he wants to fight or this and that, you know, so boys get misinterpreted too. And then there's girls where, you know, girls definitely, you know, it's all about body image to an extent. You know, certain teens are super confident. They, you know, they do activities. They might be in band, they might be in sports, and they have a good body image. But then there's a lot of, at that time, you're kind of like experimenting with what do I wear? And I want to look hot. And, you know, I want boys to notice me. And so there's a lot of like, you know, how far can I push it kind of thing as well. So, and if you have a little belly and everybody's wearing crop tops, you know, so they struggle with that too. You really see the whole gambit of it, boys and girls. It all boils down to like, you know, fitting in. So if you can fit in with a healthy crowd, whether they're popular or not, you know, they're active, they do their homework, they do fun things on the weekend, they have a good family life, you know, and I know you were talking about body image, but then it kind of slides over to peers too, you know, because a lot of it is who you're hanging out with too. So if you're hanging out with the people that are super unhealthy, then that's going to be where, you know, how you are and feel about yourself as well. So a lot of that's confidence, a lot of that's fitting in. But yeah, you see it, you know, and in teens, you have a whole range of super small kids and super big kids, just because not everyone's kind of fully grown yet. So that leads to, like, could be good in some respects, and other respects, you know, there's a lot of picking on kids too. Yeah. So, you know, if you're a girl and you're not wearing makeup, or you're not wearing this outfit or these sneakers or whatever it might be, same goes for boys too, you know, with just like whatever might be popular or in style, for example. So, and a lot of that has to do with what you look like and how you feel. So yeah, we would love to say, like, it doesn't matter. It's just, you know, just feel good regardless of what you look like. But that's really hard, even for adults.
Yeah,
you
know, I haven't figured that one out yet.
Right. So ideally, like, everyone, no one should care, and everyone should just like you for who you are. But we know the world that we live in, you know, so
yeah.
And it's also helping teens to get to that place where they can feel comfortable in their own skin, even if they do have a few extra pounds, you know, that's not necessarily a terrible thing if it's not, you know, it's what's inside, and learning to let that shine through as well. And that can be really tough, because you know, fitting in is a big thing at that age. Yes.
Yes. Yeah. And there, you know, it's frustrating that as humans, we haven't evolved past that, because we're so diverse there. I mean, there really isn't a whole lot of similarity flowing between humans anymore, especially as we become more, like, ethnically diverse. And, like, they're just, you know, they say, like, in 20 years, the avatar of the person on the earth is going to look so different. Mm-hmm. And yet we have this thing where we're pulled from the time we're kids to be the same. And it's almost like I want to say the same as what?
Right.
You know, find me the standard. There just doesn't seem to be one anymore. And maybe that's a good message too, of, you know, well, fit in with what? Fit in where? I mean, you pick something, you're going to find a group to fit into. So it's more about where do you want to fit? And that, you know, that's another question I always ask when you, as an adult, all over, you hear to surround yourself with people that call you higher. And so teenagers, their friend groups are so important.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what's the most important thing to influence, or do parents even have influence, I guess, on the friends that your teen has? I mean, like, how do you interfere if you see your kid is hanging out with kids that are not calling them higher, that are pulling mm-hmm. them in directions? Like, I've always wondered how my son, luckily he fell in with a very, you know, great group of kids, and I didn't have mm-hmm. that worry. But I thought, if he had, I don't know what I would have done. Right. I was just grateful I never had to grapple with that, but it just seems to be a thing. It's like a lack of control. They're mm-hmm. too old to, like, put in their room all the time.
Right.
But yeah, who you become, like, the people you hang out with.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of it's like, really, what is the reason behind them hanging out with that group? Like, so are they, what aren't they happy about themselves, you know, where they need to fit in with someone that might be making poor decisions or risk-taking behaviors or numbing their emotions and things like that, you know, depending upon what negative behavior they're engaging in. So truly coaching them through that so that they feel confident enough about themselves where they don't need to be a part of that group. Because, like you said, once they leave the house, you know, you hope they make the right decisions based upon the values you've instilled with them. But honestly, most of the day, they're not with you, you know? So, right. You know, you do have, and it's difficult for parents because they, you know, you want to give your kids autonomy because they do need to start, like, making decisions for themselves. But you also, there's that fine line between, like, they are still teens and don't always make the best decisions. So you also have that where you want them to make decisions with natural consequences, but consequences that aren't so much that they can't bounce back from them, you know? So it's a dance, really. And the hope is that, you know, the conversations that you have, the openness of your family, can, you know, like, the more open your teen feels they can be with you without you judging them, without jumping down their throat, but, like, truly listening to them, is definitely a healthy basis for, you know, to start the conversation. So if they have started to hang out with the wrong crowd or people you just don't agree with or feel is the right people for them, you know, at least giving them a comfortable space to, you know, to discuss that, because a lot of it isn't necessary. Like, you're not going to get anywhere just yelling at them and telling them, no, they can't hang out with them. Cause then they're just going to do it more, you know? So it's yeah. really, you know, starting that conversation of, and trying to find out, like, what is it about them that you're attracted, you know, to this group? And do you think this group of friends is really going to bring you closer to your goals or not? So it's important for teens to have goals too, because if you want to go to this college or you want to have this kind of job or whatever your goals are, is this group going to get you there?
Yeah.
That's a big thing. That's a really big thing. Yeah.
I love that. That's important. I think sometimes at least, well, there must be a shift. There has to be a shift with parenting between you have a kid where you have to basically tell them what to do. Go do this, mm-hmm. brush your teeth. And then at some point mm-hmm. it switches to guiding them to like think about what is your decision. It's almost mm-hmm. like, you know, brush your teeth, or if you don't want to brush your teeth, how do you think your teeth will feel tomorrow? Or do you mm-hmm. think you'll have cavities? And like, you can make friends with whomever you wish. I can't tell you no longer. You can speak to that person. But, and so there's a shift in that. And I know for me as a parent, it was hard for me to know when to tell mm-hmm. them and mm-hmm. when to ask them, when to suggest, when to guide, when to give them autonomy. It seems like it's dynamic, and mm-hmm. in one category, they might feel really capable, or they seem capable of making good choices. In another category, it feels like they have to be told. Mm-hmm. And what's a good way to get kids to like give you a clue? I guess that's the thing. Like, how what's a good way to ask your kids? I guess you just ask them, like, "Hey, I need help understanding how to talk to you." Is that as blunt yeah. as we should be?
I mean, you can. I mean, and there's no like. Kind of a rule book either. So it depends on the child and the dynamic in the family. But again, it's really like listening to them. And I mean, coaching is a lot of asking good questions. So, you know, not using why did you do that? Or what were you thinking when you did this? Or, you know, like that's just accusatory and makes them go on the defensive and not want to share with you, you know. But just for example, let's say something small, like they come home with a poor test grade. Well, they've already beat themselves up about it, whether you believe it or not, because that doesn't make them feel good to get a poor grade. So instead of saying like getting all mad at them, you know, like what happened, you know, what was the, you know, reason? And they might say, oh, they didn't have enough time to study, or they didn't, you know, they studied, but they studied the wrong chapter, or whatever the reason was, you know, and maybe just by how can I help you, you know, is there something I can do, you know, for the next test to help you get prepared for it? Or, you know, just kind of offering support in situations versus like condemning them. But again, there is no like, in this situation, you should give them autonomy. In this situation, you should tell them what to do. You know, it's so hard. So I agree, it is hard. But the better, the more open you can be, and you know, like they're not going to always say something you agree with. I mean, sometimes this stuff is going to be ridiculous. You're going to be like, I don't believe that at all, or I don't agree with that, or whatever it is. But not reacting to it and just like, you know, responding, you know, and saying, well, I accept your point of view, you know, but, and this is where I'm coming from. And, you know, kind of sometimes it's about coming to a middle ground and not necessarily it being the way they want it or the way you want it, but you might have to meet in the middle and, you know, build some, you know, make some joint decisions on things. And, you know, as a parent, you need to know how much you're willing to give. Like, you're not going to just give in on certain things because they're not healthy for your teen. But on other things, maybe there is some sort of, you know, balance, and you can give a little and they then feel a bit of control. And, you know, maybe, I don't know, it's a bedtime thing and you can give them an extra half hour depending on how old your teen is, you know? So there's things that, you know, you can kind of negotiate a bit too. And they also like to be part of the decision-making, you know? So right. Again, it's a dance and it takes a lot of patience for sure.
Well, that's for sure. Patience. Yeah. So another question that I got was, and this might be a little too specific. You probably have to know more about it, but maybe you can generally respond. But how does a parent handle a two-household split parenting situation with different nutrition standards in each house. So this maybe wouldn't apply to just teens, but, you know, two sets of rules, two different houses. How, what's like, what are some strategies to handling something like that?
Yeah, I do get that a lot of with divorced parents or separated parents, and it could be eating strategies. It could be any kind of strategies. I mean, there's probably a reason why the parents aren't together anymore for whatever values or, you know, things they couldn't agree upon. And then, you know, when I coach a teen or a family for that matter, the best thing that for someone like me is to have all parties on the same page, or at least at the table. So, you know, if I'm coaching a teen and they have divorced parents, I will want both of those parents on the call. And even if those parents don't get along at all, but they need to make the best decisions for their teens. So sometimes that works, and that's great. And that if you can get the two parents in the room is the best scenario. And other times you can't, and it's kind of coaching the teen through making those good decisions regardless of what situation they're in, whether it be their friends, their, you know, at school with their dad, with their mom. So if mom has really poor eating habits and dad has really good eating habits, well, can you eat the vegetables you were eating with dad? Can that habit carry over because you're making that decision for yourself? Can that habit carry over into eating at mom's house? You know, and yeah, that takes a lot, because obviously they don't have all the control over the purchasing of the groceries. But, you know, if it becomes that important to the teen, it won't matter what situation they're in, but that takes time to get to that point.
Yeah,
yeah, gotcha. Definitely does.
So is that something that you do with teen coaching and in a, you know, situation? So like, I have a friend, she's going through a really messy divorce. They're having a hard time getting the one of their kids to go to therapy at all. And so the therapy just seems terrible to that kid, and they're just like, I don't want to go. Is coaching, have you used that as kind of an option for, hey, this isn't therapy, it's not so punitive, this is a different feeling, give this a try? Is that kind of a good option? Or in that case, when therapy is really needed, is it best to say, no, I don't want to get involved?
Yeah, totally. Like, I've done a lot of that. So I guess it's a two-part answer. Like, if a lot of times I get teens or parents that they've tried therapy and the for whatever reason, whether it was they didn't have a connection with the therapist, or they just didn't like listening to what the therapist had to say, and they will turn to coaching, and it does work. And that tends to be something that I work on, whether it be a divorced family or it's just a transition. So the coaching will kind of give the team the support they need to make the best decisions for themselves. And then there are other times where there is something that, like, out of my wheelhouse. So a teen that might be having suicidal ideations, for example, understood, I can talk to that teen, but they're going to need a higher level of support than a coach, you know? So at times the coaching is perfect. And then other times, like, I know when to refer that teen to, maybe they still work with me coaching, but then they also have someone they see for that concern, you know? So it depends on the severity of what the teen is going through, for sure.
Indeed.
Yes.
It's a lot. I know, and I'm asking you specific questions on dynamic situations, but
it's good
to know. So do you have any final thoughts for parents just in general that you as a teen coach kind of wish that all parents would know, or you feel like would be helpful for all parents of teens to understand?
Yeah, I think we covered a couple of them. I think modeling is a really big thing. And kind of, if you want a certain behavior from your teen, you know, to model that behavior. I think even though teens are older, you know, I see a lot of, like, elementary school parents are super involved. Then when they get to middle school, not so much. And then high school, maybe not as much. And though teens may, you know, get an attitude or, you know, at times not know how to control their emotions, they still want to be with you and spend time with you. So finding, like, time that you put your phones down and just give to your teen. A lot of times they might be engaging in negative behaviors, but it's trying to get attention from you. Mm-hmm. And then another thing is just listening to them and really listening to them, not just all, like, oh, I'm like in your head, you know, the next thing that they're going to say. So right away you jump down, you know, you just kind of respond right away. No, like actually listening to them and like repeating back what they're, you know, something to the effect of like, oh, so I'm hearing you say X, Y, and Z. And then the teen really feels heard. And, you know, just being vulnerable with them, listening to them and providing them some sort of sense of control and decision-making. So, you know, giving them a little bit of power in a positive way so that they can reach the goals that they are meant to reach. Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah.
And if we have any teenagers listening, what's like some comments, some, the best advice you can give to a teenager?
Oh my gosh. I want to meet all of them. I love them. Teens, I mean, the best thing is truly to love themselves. And as adults, a lot of us haven't learned how to do that yet. And that's a big ask. I know that, but you know, a lot of times teens are really hard on themselves because they don't have this outfit or this skill, or they're not good at basketball, or, you know, whatever, you fill in the blank. Mm-hmm. I'm not the prettiest. I'm not the whatever. And, you know, comparing yourself to others is something we all do a lot. And for teens, it's, we do that a lot. And, you know, they have social media, they have all movie stars and everything out there that they can compare themselves to, but to truly, you know, love who they are and try to, you know, just block all of that out to let their true nature shine through. And when they do that, they're going to attract the right group of friends and the goals that are best for them and the activities that work for them. So just really being themselves. Yep.
Love that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that. And that's like you say, it's like universal for all of us. Like yep. That it applies to all of us. It's just, you know, I think we talked about at the beginning, like the idea of a teen just seems so overwhelming just because there's the, well, I think for me, I remember how I was when I was a teenager and I remember how confusing I was and I regret so many things and I'm embarrassed with so many things. So then, you know, often I think of teenagers and I think, oh my gosh, you know, I immediately think they were like me and I feel sorry for them for having to feel all of those things. And also, you know, I don't really know in hindsight what would it could have made my teenage experience better, except I guess basically all these things that you say, it would have been really nice to be heard, to be, feel like I had a voice, even if I didn't get to make the rules, to at least feel like I could have expressed myself. You know, I don't like this thing that I'm doing, instead of being like, you're not allowed to say that, to really say, well, I'm sorry that you don't like it. I hear you. I understand it's unpleasant. You know, that would have made the fact that I had to do it a lot easier. But, you know, in my situation, I think back, I wasn't allowed to even voice any dissent or displeasure. It was, you know, you better be happy about this.
Right.
And so, so I think when you're talking, I think about how your advice, if that had been modeled in my life or if my parents had done that, yeah, I think it would have made my teenagers a little bit easier, at least less emotionally charged and, you know, frustrating, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree.
What's the number one emotion you hear from teenagers when you say, how are you feeling? Is it?
Like, I don't, they got a lot of emotions, a lot of emotions,
but is it, there's like a common theme? Are they feeling frustrated? Are they feeling confused, indifferent?
I guess it depends upon the situation. One emotion. I mean, I think it comes out in a lot of ways, but it might be, you know, a bit of frustration, like you're saying, a confusion. You know, I mean, this is all new territory. Everything feels different. And don't forget, they're going through all kinds of changes emotionally and physically too. So, yeah, to pinpoint one emotion would be tough, but I think a lot of the fact of their emotions fluctuating so much tends to, you know, hit at that self-confidence piece. And, you know, how can you have self-esteem, super, so strong self-esteem when you're feeling all over the place? You know, so I think with teens, it can be an emotional roller coaster, whether they want to say, you know, you say sad one day, happy one day, just to be basic about emotions. But you'd be surprised how teens can also articulate their emotions too, if given the right, you know, kind of stage per se. So, I mean, I've obviously it's the whole gambit of emotions that they feel just like we do, but really what it comes down to is our, how to handle those and just kind of like, don't sit in the negative ones too long, feel them, understand what, try to understand where they're coming from, you know, and let them pass through. But yeah, they definitely feel it. And it's, you know, just us being here for them and not judging them on it, but just being supportive throughout the process. Okay. Yeah.
That's good advice.
Yeah.
Awesome. So if somebody is listening, wants to talk to you, work with you, if they have a teenager and they're like, hey, this sounds great, I'd love to work with you, how do they reach you?
Yeah. So definitely on Facebook. Dr. Carla Couturia is one of the ways you can reach me on social media. Same on Instagram, same handle, Dr. Carla Couturia. I'm on LinkedIn and you can reach out, you know, those are the best ways. You can just send me a DM and then we can connect that way. Yeah.
Awesome. And what is it like when so if I call you and say, hey, I want to work with you, do you have an intake process? Is it, what's it like?
Yeah, definitely. We can jump on a call and I'll just, you know, ask you some questions about your teen, see where you're at, where your teen is at. And if we did, you know, like through that process, if we say, I say, wow, this is a really good fit. I think that this would be a potentially great teen for me to work with. And I definitely can support them. And then we would go from there. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, that sounds easy enough.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
And you work with people locally and remote as well, right?
Yep. I work all remote. So I can work with anyone all over the world, really. Yeah.
Awesome. Phenomenal. We forgot to talk about that in the beginning. You're here in Miami, but the way of the world is global. So it works really well.
And honestly, with the amount of activities that teens do every day after school and all that, it makes it a lot to try to drive somewhere, slightly impossible. So it works really well. Yeah.
That sounds great.
Awesome. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate your time and letting us just pick your brain.
Yes, thank you.
I will post Carla's information in the notes of the episode. I'll also post it on my social media and link everybody to Dr. Carla. Feel free to reach out to her via social media and the ways that she mentioned too. I'm sure Dr. Carla would be happy to answer your random questions as well directly.
Absolutely.
And I guess the moral of the story is, at least for me, is what I'm hearing is teens are people too. It seems like dialogue, honest conversation, dialogue, and listening is really, really important.
Yes. Yeah.
That feels very doable. I feel a sense of relief for all teenagers and all parents of teenagers having talked to you. So.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to the podcast. I'm so excited you're here. If you want to interact with me, go ahead and send me an email, Kristen@KristensmithOnline.com. Follow me on Instagram, The Kristen Experience, and make sure you share this podcast with a friend. That's all I have for you today. Have an awesome week. We'll see you next time here on Destination Begin.